This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, March 11th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from the EurekaSprings.org website, a guide for shopping, art galleries, historic tours, and spa locations. The site also includes information on horseback riding, canoeing, hiking, and other outdoor activities. On the web at EurekaSprings.org. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a series of stories about philanthropic events happening in Northwest Arkansas. First, we'll learn more about the Apparel Studies program at the U of A, which has given four students the skills they need to participate in Northwest Arkansas Fashion Week. The event kicks off today and has returned for its second year, and proceeds will benefit local charities. Also, an online pop-up shop opens today to help a couple of local artists who recently suffered a tragedy. Those stories and more, but first, last week we reported on a bill making its way through the Arkansas legislature that aims to give property owners a means of recouping losses in property value incurred by development regulations passed by a government entity. The Arkansas Municipal League and the City of Fayetteville have both stated opposition to the bill, and this week the City of Springdale is following suit. Tomorrow night, the Springdale City Council is set to consider a resolution stating opposition to the bill. Springdale City Attorney Ernest Kate says the bill has the potential to garner litigation against the city's planning and zoning regulations. He says the bill's legal threshold of a 10% devaluation in property value is overly vague.
I mean, how do you determine that? I believe it would severely restrict our ability to do what the law allows us to do as far as zoning and putting regulations on the development of land, and it's just not clear. You know, and there's already federal case law on what's called regulatory takings. Regulatory takings is, well, if the city takes some action and it affects the property value of someone's property, then in some instances the city's required to pay that person. You know, it's in effect the taking of that person's property, and there's already federal law on that, and this just... I'm not sure exactly what the purpose is behind this bill.
Kate says this bill could have an impact on any of the city's development regulations, including the proposed Interstate 540 overlay district that city staff has been developing for months.
If we pass the overlay district, if a property owner believes that by us adding this extra layer of regulation on top of all these properties, if they believe that it decreased the value of their property by more than 10%, then it could result in litigation.
Senate Bill 367 was passed by the State Senate last week, and the bill heads to the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow morning. The Springdale City Council meets tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. Governor Mike Beebe is touting the state's efforts to end childhood hunger. In his weekly radio address last week, the governor said that while fewer children are going without food, due in part to school-based programs that give children backpacks full of food to take home over the weekend, more still needs to be done.
Through the Federal Summer Food Service Program, children can receive the same high-quality meals in the summer months as they get during the school year. Last summer, there were more than 500 summer feeding sites throughout our state, meaning that nearly 28,000 kids found a nutritious meal each day. Our improvement in those numbers led to recognition from the USDA, but many other Arkansas children still do not have dependable access to food in the summer. In fact, last summer, nearly one-third of Arkansas's counties did not have a single feeding site.
Governor Beebe says the Arkansas Department of Human Services is seeking additional volunteer organizations to provide more summer feeding sites throughout the state. The application deadline to participate is April 15th, and more information can be found at the DHS website, humanservices.arkansas.gov. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville recently received more national recognition. Last week, the museum was honored by the Associated General Contractors of America as one of the best construction projects of 2012. For the museum construction project, contractors Lindbeck of Houston, Texas, and Nabholz Joint Venture of Conway were among 17 firms to receive the GCA's Alliant Build America Award. According to a release by the organization, the award recognizes the nation's most significant construction projects and the project's special considerations, including a suspended cable structural system on the Crystal Creek Waterway. And the goal of protecting the art inside the museum led to the project's nomination for the Build America Award. The Pea Ridge National Military Park has announced cuts in operating hours as a result of federal sequestration budget cuts. Under the new hours, the park will be open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on all days except Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Day. And the visitor center will be open between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. on the same days. The Buffalo National River has also announced scaled back operations as a result of sequestration, including fewer trash cans, no trail crew for the year, and the closure of both restrooms and entire campsites throughout the Buffalo National River. For a full list of the changes, visit the National Parks website at nps.gov. The University of Arkansas College of Engineering has announced its next dean. John English, who is currently serving as the dean of the Engineering College at Kansas State University, will become the ninth dean of the U of A Engineering College. In addition, English will also hold the Irma F. and Raymond F. Giffels Endowed Chair in Engineering. He is a U of A alumnus, earning both his bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and master's degree in operations research at the university. He also was a faculty member in the U of A's Department of Industrial Engineering from 1991 to 2007, and he was head of the department from 2000 to 2007. English takes the reins of the College of Engineering as its national reputation has been bolstered by a 19th place ranking by U.S. News and World Report. It was a good weekend for sports in Fayetteville as more than one Razorback team achieved victory in their respective events. The number one U of A men's and track and field team won the NCAA Indoor Championships, which took place at the Randall Tyson Track Center. The team clinched the top spot with 74 points, the highest team total since the Razorbacks scored 94 points in their push for the title in 1994. The win marks the program's 20th such title and the 41st national crown overall. The win is Arkansas's first NCAA win since 2006. The women's track and field team, which was the third-ranked team, placed fourth in its indoor championship bid. The team finished with a program record 42.5 points and the third top five finish in 3 years. And finally, the Diamond Hogs this weekend made up for a poor showing last week in the Coca-Cola Classic. After a 2-0 shutout Thursday, the Razorbacks again defeated San Diego State 4-3 on Friday. The team continued its winning momentum in a doubleheader Saturday when it again defeated San Diego State 8-2 in the first game and 4-1 in the second. The team will return to Baum Stadium tomorrow evening to begin a two-game set against Alabama A&M. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the upper 20s to lower 30s. Expect partly sunny conditions tomorrow with highs from the mid to upper 50s. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows from 26 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 32 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Last week, the Northwest Arkansas Council released the results of a study on the area's business retention and expansion efforts. The study was compiled from interviews by area chambers of commerce with 459 local companies. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis spoke with Mike Harvey, Chief Operating Officer of the Council, about the survey and what the results mean for the region moving forward.
Based on the results of this study, is it safe to say that business is booming in Northwest Arkansas?
You know, I actually wish, I can't say that, you know, definitively, I actually wish we had an ability to do comparisons against peer regions in the rest of the country with some of these things. You get the feeling that there's definitely been an uptick over the past 12 months. I was telling the group today, if you look at 09, 10, and 11, you kind of had this year going into years of cautious optimism, but 12 seemed to be a real snapback, a real recovery in Northwest Arkansas. I think while the rest of the country still just got on that slow growth uptick, I won't know for sure until middle of the year in terms of just hard numbers, but when a third of your companies that you're talking to, and this is not scientific, but when a, you know, almost a third of them are saying we have growth plans, that's a great sign.
Although this report has quite a bit of good news in it, you mentioned the benefits versus drawbacks of operating in Northwest Arkansas.
Yep.
Were there any concerns regarding the capacity for further business development in the area?
Yes, I mean, specifically, so I wouldn't call it chronic. In other words, it's not diffused. It's not really across the board. We've got some issues specifically in the trades areas, and it's nothing new, and it's nothing that's specific to Northwest Arkansas. But one of our concerns out of this is, and it's more than anecdotal, because about half of the respondents in the trades areas are telling us that they were having issues finding skilled workers. It didn't pop up, you know, it didn't rank very high on barriers to growth right now, but I think as you go into recovery and you start to see real growth at those industries, at that industry level, then it may present a barrier to growth, and that growth may go somewhere else. And so that's something we need to be, you know, focused on as a region, you know, our cities, because those are good living wage jobs that don't require college degrees. So you want to capture as many of those as you can.
What are some things that could be done in this area to generate more skilled workers for the trade sector?
Well, it's pretty complicated, you know, kind of looking at it and talking to different interests around the area. I mean, I think several probably things that we need to do. One of the things that we need to do is convince parents that a four-year degree, and I don't want to sound like that guy that says not all kids could, you know, need to go to college. Well, some kids don't go to college, and we need our K-12 schools preparing them for the workforce, whether or not they are going to college. So, one, figuring that out, and two, figuring out, and I guess it's more of a marketing issue for the parents and for the schools to basically say these are good, well-paying jobs that you can get out of school. And it's, you know, the trades, I think, over the years have gotten less and less popular with the young people, but they're, I think they're coming back, and we need to figure out a way to convince parents and kids that these are worthy options, I think, in terms of work to pursue once they get out of high school, if they so choose to do that. The third thing, I think, would be to figure out a way to combine short and intermediate term on-the-job training, OJT-type work, either on-site or at the training institutions, and couple that with some workplace essential skills modules. So what we're finding is that between grade 12 and grade 14, if you want to say, it's a, less than a two-year degree but more than a high school diploma. That's kind of where a lot of these people fall out, and we need to figure out how to align those two and figure out a way to deliver that service so we can start filling that pipeline back up. It's not something that you can just say we're going to do a X program at one of these institutions, because the feasibility might not be there, because while the issue is there, the numbers might not be there to justify it, unlike healthcare, which has had huge growth.
So aside from a decline in skilled workers for the trade sector, what would you say some main ideas are that can be taken away from this study?
Well, I think I mentioned five things in there that kind of jumped out at me. Selling to the world, no matter how big you are, I think is a tremendous opportunity that Northwest Arkansas companies have and that some are beginning to take advantage of. We need to figure out how to facilitate that more. Great big world market out there, and it's getting easier and easier to sell to, and we need to basically help facilitate that. Infrastructure is a huge deal for these companies. So we advocated aggressively for Garvey and the half-penny sales tax this year. So that'll lead to about $450 million worth of road improvements in the area, and that'll go a long way over the next decade to alleviate a lot of the issues that they were talking about with infrastructure. But another part of that, which was a big sticking point for a lot of companies, is getting my workers to and from work via public transportation. And so finding a solution, connectivity, working with the localities to come up with a regional public transit solution that is employer-focused as well, using some of this turnback money that's coming from this half-penny, is going to be a priority of ours. So I think those are you know, several areas that we're going to be working on as a council. So a lot of this is in our work plan or in our plans already, the survey itself was somewhat of a validation exercise for us this year. You know, I was pretty excited to find that there wasn't much that they were saying, hey, we need help with this, that we weren't working on or had plans for already.
So you mentioned at the beginning of our talk that this study was based off of reports submitted by area chambers of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Is this study something that the Northwest Arkansas Council will continue conducting to measure progress in the area?
Yeah, so in essence what we do is we have contracts with our local chambers to do the outreach, to do these interviews and do 450 or more. They did 459 this year, every year. And so, you know, going forward, it's our goal to sustain this level of outreach to our existing businesses so we can keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on out there. I told the group today this is not scientific, but it's something that we can really glean a lot of good information from and take action if we need to.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Sure, man. Anytime.
Mike Harvey is the Chief Operating Officer for the Northwest Arkansas Council. More information is available at nwacouncil.org.
Nothing funny in the news? Think again. The Pope Emeritus got his red slippered feet up in the Armani tracksuit with a bottle of Pellegrino, watching Golden Girls right about now. Conventional wisdom says the next Pope is white, male, and Catholic. Join me this week for all the news that isn't and more on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
What Do You Know? Saturday mornings at 10 here on KUAF 91.3 FM. Each week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas gives us an update on the biggest political and business news headlines from around the state. Today, tax cuts and tax revenues are on his agenda.
State lawmakers are eyeing several areas for reforming the state's tax code. By some estimates, there are more than $2 billion in potential tax cuts already filed in the bills aiming to reduce Arkansas taxes. Top business sources indicate that four areas are being seriously studied for major changes. They include income tax bracket reform, a capital gains tax cut, the grocery tax reduction, and targeted business tax relief. Among income tax reform, the top Arkansas personal income bracket of 7% could be reduced in quarters or by thirds to a lower rate for those making above $34,000 annually. The impact could be hundreds of millions of dollars on the state. Four bills related to agricultural and manufacturing tax relief are also being considered among the package of business-friendly tax reforms. February's state revenue numbers showed consumers spending more money than the previous month, and a lack of income tax refunds also helped cushion the state coffers. The Arkansas General Revenue Report for February totaled net revenues of $210 million. That was up 10.5% above last year and more than 8% above forecast. Year-to-date, net available general revenues total more than $3.1 billion. That's up 5.6% above year-ago levels, and it's also 3.2% above forecast. As part of a five-year, $20 billion commitment to the cause, Walmart unveiled an online destination through Walmart.com that gives shoppers who want to buy unique and interesting products the opportunity to do so while supporting small, women-owned businesses around the world. More than 200 items, from jewelry and iPad cases to coffee beans and apparel, will be sold on the Empowering Women Together section of Walmart.com. The products come from 9 countries, including Cambodia, Haiti, and the United States. Windrock International's board of directors announced that Rodney Ferguson will become the organization's new president and CEO on April 1st. He'll succeed Frank Tugwell, who's retiring after leading Windrock for more than 14 years. Ferguson, currently a principal with Lipman Hearn in Washington, D.C., will be responsible for the strategic, programmatic, financial, and management operations of Windrock International. And finally, new Arkansas Aerospace Alliance Director Chad Causey outlined an agenda that includes getting the newly independent group moving forward with more members and increased industry awareness. The Alliance held the 2013 Arkansas Aerospace Summit at the Fort Smith Convention Center on Wednesday with about 250 in attendance. Causey said the industry must work better with public schools and higher education to provide better job training for the industry. He also said tax reforms that could be beneficial to the aerospace sector and advanced manufacturers should also be considered. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Beginning today, Northwest Arkansas Fashion Week returns for its second year. Events this week, which include launch parties, a shop local party, and runway shows, will help raise money for local nonprofits. Among those participating in Thursday night's runway shows are designers from the University of Arkansas. These students are enrolled in the Apparel Studies program, which is found in the Dale Bumpers College of Agricultural, Food, and Life Sciences. Dr. Lori Apple, an associate professor and area coordinator of apparel studies at the U of A, says the apparel studies program started out as a home economics program, which was created years ago.
That's why we're in the agricultural college, because we really were born and bred out of the agriculture. As men would go out and teach agriculture to the farmers, the women would go out and teach the clothing and the nutritional part of that. And so that's why we, as a school, we still have nutrition and hospitality, we have family relations, and we have apparel.
The Department of Home Economics on the U of A campus was created in 1913. The department offered courses in domestic science and domestic arts. In 1914, the students and faculty organized the Home Economics Club, and they quickly established themselves in the life of the college and grew rapidly in enrollment. During the 1917 to 1918 school year, the Home Economics Department provided 7 of the 18 graduates from the college. The Home Economics Building, which is located just north of Mullins Library, was completed in 1940. 14 years after construction, the growing importance of the home economics program led to renaming the college in 1954 as the College of Agriculture and Home Economics. Today, the apparel studies program has about 250 students, and it provides them with a well-rounded education in their field.
We have been guided by a terrific advisory board, and they love the fact that we focus on the industry as a whole. So the student actually understands the entire process of the fashion industry once they graduate, as opposed to just maybe knowing a design part of it, or a product development part of it, or a merchandising part of it. So that really they can communicate across all levels of the industry, and that's really our key in creating this one specific major within the college.
Lori says the program is for anyone that wants to be in any part of the fashion industry. She explains that the program focuses mostly on product development and merchandising. The apparel studies program even offers students real-world experience. In one of the classes Lori teaches, called textile design, students have the opportunity to have their product sold at a local store.
We learn how to design the textile print. So we start with a print. We do woven, so we learn how to interlace woven shirts and things like that. We also do knit design. We're currently working on a project for Dillard's Men's, which we have been working and partnering with them for the last couple of years. And our students will actually present to them at the end of the semester, and they'll choose one, which will go on the sales floor. So it's quite something for a student to be able to design a textile product and a graphic in our class, and then have it selected by a major department store and then sold nationwide.
Because design can be very subjective, Lori says she doesn't grade students based on each other. She says it's really based on the student's skill and what they bring to the table, their creativity and their innovativeness.
It's very subjective, when, especially if someone knows exactly which direction they want to go. And honestly, in textile design and pattern design, I don't really limit my students on what they can. They have to learn the basics of the computer program. That's really my job, is to teach them those basics and how to use this, how to use the computer system, and then use their skills for what they want to go and do. I don't try to limit them on the direction of what kind of design. You really can't teach true design. I mean, as far as either somebody has that skill or they don't. And what we're doing is we're teaching the tools really to enhance that skill.
For students who will be showing off their skills on the runway this week are Caroline DeLay, Anna Taylor, Tiara Hudson, and Elisa May. Although they are all part of the same program, each has their own unique concept for their collection. Anna, for example, has been inspired by her time in Africa.
I moved there in the middle of my sophomore year, and I started a sewing training program with women in the slums, and the purpose of my line is to give Kenyans jobs and other women in third world countries, and I just am in love with the African patterns and prints.
The theme, as well as the song Caroline is using while displaying her looks, is I'm Every Woman.
I'm using my friends as models, and I wanted to incorporate different sizes and flattering looks on each of them. So I've size 2 up to a size 14, and I have 5 looks, and I'm using corals and florals.
Okay, and you?
I'm doing both menswear and womenswear, but my favorite thing about menswear is that, like, I'm doing printed pants, which most men don't wear printed pants, but I think it's cool to kind of venture into that because, like, it's not really done very much. So there's so much that you can do with menswear that people aren't really doing. And then for womenswear, just pretty lacy things, a little bit of leather.
Tiara says her collection is inspired by living on the East Coast.
I want to kind of bring that East Coast vibe, just really simple and chic. And I titled mine Rocker Chic because it's kind of edgy, but it's really feminine. So I have like a lot of dresses, and I've done some sheath dresses with leather on the top, kind of graphic on the bottom. And it's just something that everybody can wear. And I'm really simple, so I like a lot of simple things. So
the minimum amount of pieces the students could create is 5. And although they have a varying number of pieces and their own unique styles, they are all looking at their participation in the event as something positive.
I'm just thankful for the experience.
It's so much fun backstage. Mm-hmm. Being backstage, it's so much energy, and it's great. It's a lot of fun.
This is just, I guess, a stepping stool for me because I've had a lot of obstacles. So just to be here right now is something that empowered myself. So just to be in this kind of atmosphere is really cool. Mm-hmm. You know, makes my family proud, makes me proud.
I've kind of envisioned it for a while, and I think since my first year in this major, I kind of thought, oh, it's something I wanted to do before it was even Northwest Arkansas Fashion Week. They had a little apparel studies one, and I was like, oh, I can definitely do that. So it's cool envisioning it and seeing it come to life, and my hard work and all of these girls' hard work is going to pay off.
The Fashion Week show featuring the students' designs is sold out, but there are a number of other events happening throughout the week to help benefit local charities. Details are available at nwafw.com. For more information about the Apparel Studies program at the University of Arkansas, visit bumperscollege.uark.edu. It is Monday, March 11th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So Kyle's been gone a lot.
He's getting back soon.
So does that mean we can, like, run off for spring break?
I suppose if he doesn't catch us, there's not much he can do about it, right?
Well, there's all that fun stuff going on that we talked about Friday. Maybe we could just slip out.
We could squeeze it in during the day.
Okay, let's talk after this.
Okay.
Okay. Tonight, the Mid-South Watercolorist Exhibit, actually it's from 8 to 6 today, at the west end of the first floor of the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center at UAFS, and it continues through this week, and it's free. the Coin Harvey exhibit, Buried Dreams, Coin Harvey, and Montanay. It's a Rogers Historical Museum exhibit, and it's open at the Bentonville Public Library through March.
Is it?
It is the most popular exhibit that they do.
I enjoy the one that was in the Rogers Historical Museum. Have they taken that down?
I'm sure that this is a reduced version
right?
of it.
Right, because if it's still at the Rogers Historical Museum, it's fun because you can go and kind of sit in the replica of the chair and watch the documentary.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, if you're not fascinated by Coin Harvey, you don't know Coin Harvey. So check it out. And there's a drawing explorations workshop, Capturing the Persona in Portraits, inspired by Norman Rockwell. At 1 o'clock today, it continues for the next three Mondays at Crystal Bridges Museum.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge will host its 23rd annual Kite Festival celebration on March 23rd. Art with an Altitude is a free family event inviting attendees to bring their own kites or build one at the refuge. The celebration includes vendors, contests, and fun activities for parents and children, plus a performance by local band The Skillet Lickers. Admission is free for kite flying. Regular admission prices apply to the tour the refuge wildlife on display. Proceeds finance rescue and ongoing care for more than 120 tigers, lions, cougars, and other wildlife that make the sanctuary a lifelong home. For more information, turpentinecreek.org or call 479-253-5841. The UAFS Jazz Band and Jazz Cats will perform March 29th at 7:30 p.m. with guest artist Rosanna Eckert. Eckert will also conduct a vocal clinic that day at 10 a.m. The vocal clinic is free. For tickets or more information about the concert, 479-788-7300. On Saturday, March 16th, Andy Lowry, a Washington County Master Gardener, will give a presentation on vegetable gardening for extreme conditions during the next meeting of the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas. It begins at 9:30 a.m. at NTI in Springdale. For more information, call 479-361-2198.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
I have never been concerned about the bridges I have burned. I have never been confused. It didn't matter win or lose. I've never fell apart before. But when you walk through that door, I let away too much of me. Walk away with you.
Enos William McDonald was born to Sam and Ethel in Greenway, Arkansas, in Clay County on October 1, 1915. He grew up in Rector. McDonald got his nickname Skeets as a young boy in the Arkansas cotton fields while being swarmed by mosquitoes. Skeets McDonald left Greenway High School in 1932. He played in hillbilly bands in St. Louis and on WEXL Radio in Royal Oak, Michigan in 1936, gigging on the weekends.
Chin up, chest up. Get set, old broken heart. I'll bet you're gonna think I've lost my mind. Chin up, chest out. Get set, old broken heart. I'm gonna let her break you one more time.
Skeets McDonald returned from World War II in 1946 with a Bronze Star. In 1950, McDonald had a vocal on a local Michigan hit called The Tattooed Lady. The Tattooed Lady was a centuries-old risque song. Rudy Vallee recorded it in 1934 and Walter O'Keefe in 1933. McDonald also recorded for Mercury Records as Skeet Saunders, but really came into his own when he relocated to California in February 1951.
I gotta hurry into town and I'm gonna pick up Mabel.
One more time.
We'll hide away in the swinging cafe at the table.
One more time.
I'm tired from working all day and I hope that I'm able to shake it till dawn and keep carrying on with Mabel.
In April 1951, Skeets McDonald signed with Capitol Records and began appearing on Hometown Jamboree, which ran through the 1950s on KXLA-TV. The cast also featured Ferlin Husky and Tennessee Ernie Ford. Guest stars included Arkansas-connected country acts like T. Texas Tyler and Patsy Montana. Skeets later became a cast member of Town Hall Party. Town Hall Party broadcast live through the 1950s, Straight Outta Compton on Saturday nights through 1960 on KTTV. Jay Stewart, later of Let's Make a Deal, MC'd. Merle Travis and the Collins Kids were also among the regular cast of 32. Arkansas's Lefty Frizzell and Johnny Cash were among the guest stars. Okies, Arkies, and others who had migrated west years before had helped build a West Coast country sound. And Skeets McDonald was an important part of it.
Yes, this old broken heart's just bumming around.
Skeets McDonald stayed with Capitol Records until 1958, even trying a bit of rockabilly. But his biggest hit was right out of the gate with Don't Let the Stars Get in Your Eyes in late 1952. In 1960, McDonald signed with Columbia Records. That label became a country powerhouse in the 1960s, but more thanks to Arkansas's Johnny Cash and Lefty Frizzell and others than Skeets McDonald, who just had a handful of minor hits for the label. More than a decade after Don't Let the Stars Get in Your Eyes topped the country charts, Skeets did score a top 10 hit with Call Me Mr. Brown. Skeets McDonald stayed with Columbia until the end of 1966 and recorded one single for another label.
He knows he's got to set you free, and he knows you'll run to me. I'd hate to be him, loving you the way I do.
Skeets McDonald toured the Philippines for a week in February 1968. The next month, on March 31st, he died of a heart attack at home on a Sunday morning after a Saturday night show in San Diego, California. McDonald had always said when he died, he wanted to be buried in his native Arkansas. His body was taken back to Rector on April 5th, and there, Enos William Skeets McDonald was buried. Here in its entirety is Skeets McDonald of Greenway and Rector in Clay County, with his last top 10 hit, Call Me Mr. Brown, from 1963.
Just pretend you know me casually. Don't let people know how much you mean to me. Don't call me by my first name when people are around. Just say hello and call me Mr. Brown. It seems so right to be so wrong when your sweet lips meet mine, but I just can't give you up. I've tried so many times. So till you're in my arms tonight, somewhere outside of town, just say hello and call me Mr. Brown. When we shake hands, it's hard to let you go. I know you feel the same. You want to hold me close, but we must keep it formal each time we meet in town. Just say hello and
to be so wrong when your sweet lips meet mine. But I just can't give you up. I've tried so many times. So till you're in my arms tonight, somewhere outside of town, just say hello and call me Mr. Brown. Just say hello and call me Mr. Brown.
Arkansas, your Skeets McDonald of Clay County with Call Me Mr. Brown, his last top 10 country hit from 1963. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. To a carpenter, hands are everything. A few weeks ago, Jonathan and Amber Paradin of Paradin Supply Company suffered a great loss when Jonathan's right index finger was amputated. The accident has forced them to put their business on hold. To help them with medical expenses as well as dealing with this period of transition, the local art community has organized a fundraiser in their honor. Last week, local artists Erica Wilhight and Stacy Bloomfield stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss the fundraising effort.
Jonathan was working in their new workspace that they've leased down in Springdale, and he amputated his right finger, and we should emphasize that Jonathan's a woodworker. That's what he does for a living, is working with his hands, and he lost a finger. So the community here and all over the United States have decided to come together and donate artwork to be sold online in a pop-up style shop, and all the proceeds are going to be donated to help them during this transition, rethinking their business and medical bills and whatever needs they have.
And you say across the United States, so how? What do you mean across the United States? How are other people getting involved? What's
well,
happening?
It's actually really cool. Jonathan and Amber sell a lot of their work online through a handmade space called Etsy. Mm-hmm. And through social media and this online platform, a lot of us have become, you know, friends. We've never even met in person, but we're big supporters of each other's handmade business. And as soon as the word went out online, like on Twitter, about Jonathan's accident, everyone was just like, how can I help? You know, if this happened to me, you know, I'd want some help. And it's been kind of overwhelming, the support that we've seen just to help someone they've never even met before. So,
and we should mention for those that don't know that Amber and Jonathan own Paradin Supply Company, and they make the art supplies that they sell. Is that how that works?
Mm-hmm. They do a bit of that. And then also they make these wooden, like, I guess wall art you would call it. Mm-hmm. So they specialize in these wooden triangles, but also these stake cutouts. So mm-hmm. Jonathan hand makes everything, and you know, losing a finger is kind of a deal breaker whenever you're a woodworker.
So you said people are donating things. Mm-hmm. What do you need more donations? Can people donate?
Yes, people can donate. And the name of the fundraiser, we've decided to call it the Four Finger Fundraiser.
Okay.
And we're having a little bit of humor to it. You know, Jonathan and Amber are good sports about this, and you know, they want to have a positive spin about this. They want to move forward. And so if you want to donate, you can email us at fourfingerfundraiser@gmail.com. And if you want to donate a gift card, if you're like a local artist and you have some work you'd like to donate, what we're doing is we're putting all of the gift certificates, donations are going to be online beginning Monday, March 11th. And then we're going to open the sale up, and anything that sells, all the proceeds are going directly to Paradin Supply Company.
And what are some of the things that you guys have gotten already? Because I noticed the website had some art already up on it.
Yeah, we have a lot of artwork, just paintings, for instance. Let's see, I have a list here. Locally, like Bath Junkie has donated a $100 gift card to their store. Sleet City Decor, which is also local, they do big wall art, like with panels and things, and they've donated things. We have clothing that's been donated. Something really cool is a shop actually in Kentucky has designed an exclusive Arkansas t-shirt to be sold for the fundraiser, and they're not selling it anywhere else. And so if you go online and buy this shirt, you'll get to have this exclusive, amazing Arkansas shirt that they designed, and all the profits are going directly to the Paradin. So it's actually really exciting.
That is very exciting. And why do you think everybody felt I was just so amazed at how quickly everybody seemed to jump on board. You know, I saw it, I think, on Facebook or something like that. Like you said, it went through social media, and it just seemed like everybody was willing to, like, how can I help? What can I do? And this came together like that.
Well, all I can say is if you've ever met Jonathan and Amber, you immediately love them. They're the type of people that are so ingrained in Northwest Arkansas.
I met Jonathan when he was volunteering for Last Night a couple of festivals ago, and they give so much, and not just to my organization and my endeavors, but they are they just contribute so much to our community. And people that don't know them are coming up to me and asking, how can I do something? I wanted to add to the fundraising effort, this will maybe a continuous thing ongoing. We want to raise as much money as we can. But the reason I'm here today is because the Artist Laboratory Theater, we are performing Found Fayetteville at the Sheet Fort Experience on March 22nd and 23rd. And those tickets for $10 a ticket, you can come and see a show, and 100% of the ticket sales go towards the Paradins. So that's a two-night event. If you wanted to see the show anyway, you get another chance the 22nd and the 23rd, and then you can also give to the Paradins.
Items are on sale now, and the pop-up shop will remain open for a week, but Stacy says it could be open longer if she keeps receiving more donations. Monetary donations can be made directly at the website fourfingerfundraiser.blogspot.com. Also, all proceeds from ticket sales at the March 22nd and 23rd Found Fayetteville performances by Artist Laboratory Theater will be donated to the Paradins. Admission is $10, and the event will take place at the Be Unlimited Theater, located at 612 West Center in Fayetteville. Parking is free, and look for the red door. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. A first-time-ever lineup highlights a benefit concert Sunday night at Greenhouse Grill in Fayetteville. The kids-friendly show includes Shannon Wurst, Still on the Hill, and Candy Lee and the Sweets. It was Candy Lee who organized the Rise from the Ashes concert to help a family devastated by a house fire. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums recently talked to her about the show.
The inspiration for this performance is a bit of bad news, actually, isn't it?
Yes, it's very bad news. Andy Kay and her daughter, Italy, have been big fans of my music, and also through that have become good friends of mine. And when I heard that their house burnt down and that they had recently lost everything, I immediately started thinking of ways that I could help. And, you know, what better way to help than to put on a show and support them with my music, which they love so much.
And you've brought in some friends.
I have. Yes. I wanted to make it a kid-friendly show. Kids really seem to like my music, and I've always just wanted to put on like a real kid-friendly show with a few other local musicians. Still on the Hill are great. They write such great music, and they actually have, I think, a few kids' albums. And
perform as... Mm-hmm. Toucan Jam
they do.
At
they
libraries
perform it.
And schools.
Mm-hmm. At Toucan Jam for their kids' performances, and they go all out and, you know, have cool puppets and costumes and all kinds of cool things. So I really wanted to bring them out, and then also Shannon Wurst also had a kids' album. It's I can't remember what it's called, but it's like environmentally friendly
yes.
kids' music. It's really awesome. I've heard it, and I thought it would just be a really great way for all of us to get to play together and just support this member and this family of our community.
So you've got Kelly and Donna from Still on the Hill. You got Shannon, you mm-hmm. and the Sweets.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be fun. This has never happened before, has
right.
it, with Still on the Hill, Shannon, and you?
It hasn't. And I'm glad that it's finally happening. I'm sorry that it has to happen for this kind of reason, but it's pretty cool that we can all get together and come together like this.
Have you talked at all? I mean, is there a chance that all of you will be on stage together?
We haven't talked about that.
Okay.
I'm not sure. We might have to think about it.
A kid's version of Sweet Jane or something. How those always end up, it seems. What are the particulars? When can people see this?
It's going to be March 17th, which is the St. Patrick's Day. It's going to be at the Greenhouse Grill starting at 5 p.m. We're not sure how late it's going to go on. We're thinking till around 8, maybe might end a little bit sooner. Since it is a kid-friendly show, we're not going to try and keep it going on too long. But it should be a lot of fun.
You mentioned kids like your music.
Mm-hmm.
You don't specifically write towards children. You
I just
write for an audience.
I do, yeah. I just, you know, write what I feel, and I guess it's kind of got that kid heart in the music. And it's fun. I didn't actually, when I started writing the music, think that it would become such kid-friendly music. But a lot of my friends, you know, they show it to their children, and they kind of get hooked and end up singing along, so it's pretty cool.
St. Patty's Day night around 5 at Greenhouse Grill. If someone's hearing this and for whatever reason they can't make it, they can still help out?
Sure. There is, you know, I wish I knew what the link was on Facebook.
I bet I can find it.
Yeah, there's a donation going on for the family there, for Andy Kay in Italy. Also, I've been having people just kind of contact me personally on Facebook asking about how they can help. And there's also going to be a silent auction at the event, too, and people have been donating to that. And then people have also been donating clothing items, you know, just various necessities of life that that all keep us going.
Tickets at the door, or are there advance? Or
it's just going to be all at the door.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's $5 per person. Kids 3 and under get in free. And if you know, if you feel it in your heart that you want to donate a little bit more, you're more than welcome to do that.
Okay, here's a question you weren't expecting. When you were, say, 6, 7, or 8, did you have a favorite song?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I can remember that far back. I used to listen to a lot of Raffi.
Ah.
My parents used to play Raffi for me a lot.
And he's still out there.
Yeah. He's awesome.
All right. Candy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Candy Lee and the Sweets will perform, along with Shannon Wurst and Still on the Hill, at a benefit concert this weekend at Greenhouse Grill. The Rise from the Ashes show is Sunday night, and it begins at 5. You can learn more at Candy Lee's Facebook page.
2 years ago, a massive tsunami barreled over seawalls in Japan, killing nearly 19,000 and wiping out entire communities. Now tens of thousands of people are still living in temporary housing, wondering when they'll ever have a home again. I'm Lynn Neary, rebuilding the Japanese coast, plus the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Pea Ridge. And before we end the show today, a couple of sports notes to take care of. On Friday, I mentioned that the Class 7A Boys and Girls Basketball Tournament, state tournament, was over the weekend. And so congratulations to Fort Smith Northside for defeating Fort Smith Southside on the girls' side. And congratulations to the Fayetteville High School boys on a good season, but unfortunately they lost to North Little Rock. Also, speaking of basketball, the University of Arkansas men's basketball team is going to the Southeastern Conference Tournament, and they will play their first game Thursday at 6:30 p.m. in Nashville, Tennessee. They were given the number 7 seed, and they will open play against the Vanderbilt Commodores, the number 10 seed, and the winner will move on to take on number 2 seed Kentucky Wildcats on Friday. And a big congratulations to JBU's men's basketball team, who is going to the NAIA National Tournament tomorrow morning at 7:30 at the Bill George Arena on the front steps. There will be a team send-off. There will be donuts, coffee, and giveaways will all be part of the event. And the team's first game is set for 12:30 p.m. on Thursday. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I will be joined by my co-host, Kyle Kellums. Again, thanks for listening, and I hope your week is off to a fantastic start.